Attorney Irving Pedrosa, welcome back, brother. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with me. I know, you know, I never want to take anybody's time for granted, and I appreciate you hopping on for a part two of Irving Pedrosa and everything about you. So anyway, I want to say a big thank you for spending a little bit of time with me today.
No, thank you, man. I appreciate you having me back, and it's always a good time.
Yeah, man. So I know I was listening to our first episode together, and it was over 3 years ago. So hopefully with this episode, we'll get a chance to just dig into how the last 3 years have been for you. And the first question I love to ask people is what are the biggest lessons you've learned since the last time we talked, which is kind of like the lessons you've learned over the last 3 years. What has that been for you?
I think, you know, I don't think it's any different than it was in the previous one that we talked about, but it's embracing pressure and embracing stress. That's not to say like you take in stress, right? Like, cause there's ways of you kind of de-stressing. So I always encourage everyone to have that. And so for example, mine's reading, meditating, even sauna helps a lot, but just embracing it and not being afraid of confronting stress and, you know, absorbing it. Cause it's kind of like working out. The more stress you put to your body, the stronger your body becomes. And it's kind of the same thing, you know, it's like embrace it cause it's going to come, you know?
Yeah.
And once you embrace those problems, I think you come out ahead tremendously, you know, and I think that in my career and in business over the last 3 years, that has been it. Cause sometimes I'm like, oh man, like, am I prepared for this? Or am I taking on a little bit more? And I'm like, all right, it's okay. Once at some point you kind of like, it hits you a little bit, but then I at least bounce back right away, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah. I think that's part of it.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's very relatable to what people go through on an ongoing basis, whether it's the pressure from their coworkers, or pressure from their boss, or pressure from the responsibilities at home, or pressure that come with the bills being more expensive and their income maybe not has adjusting in the same way. But that idea of pressure seems to be pretty universal, that we all face it one way or another, whether we're giving it to ourselves or our spouse is giving it to us, or our kids are giving it to us, or especially the younger people, you know, their parents giving it to them. But I think that's a universal concept of pressure that we're going to face in life. What, I know you mentioned your profession, what pressures have you been facing, over the last 3 years, or what are some that stand out to you?
You know, some, cause like, so I obviously do personal injury, but what I've noticed is, like, as I get better, so does the competition. Like, they don't put the same, you know, like the same level of attorneys up against you. As, for example, when I first started as a baby lawyer, and the cases get better, I get better, but so does your competition, you know? And in that sense, like, they're not going to put someone against you who doesn't know what they're doing. So, especially because, like, you know, usually our competition is insurance companies or big corporations. So I've noticed that, you know, and even sometimes I look back to what I was doing 3 years ago or what I was doing 5 years ago. And I was like, oh man, I wish I knew what I know now, you know, but it's like, you can't buy experience. You can't buy that in any way, you know, you just got to do it. That's part of it. I think also, you know, I think at least for me and for most lawyers I know, when we go into law school, they don't teach us anything about business. They don't teach us how to become employers. They don't teach us, you know, how to manage employees, you know, and that adds a different type of pressure, whether it's the business side of it, whether it's the employee side of it. Mm-hmm. So embracing that and learning all those parts, and that's all kind of that comes into the role, my role as a lawyer and my role in my firm, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, I know, and I can imagine the idea of the competition on the other side from cases that you're facing, and then the competition of, again, other attorneys who want maybe the same clients, even that you're going after and that you're pursuing, and the pressure of facing it. So what are your strategies? I know different people use different tactics in approaching pressure and navigating it with maturity. What has been some of your ways of or your advice to people who are facing pressure?
I think, you know, I have this saying always is like, I'm going to make my weaknesses my strengths, you know, and so it's kind of like you embrace it, you accept it. And at some point or another, like I always tell myself is like, feel the pressure, but do it anyway. And feel what I mean by it is like, I don't want to hide it. I don't want to run away from it. I want to find ways of kind of, reducing it, you know, but I think if I ignore my feelings, if I ignore what I feel at the time, then it doesn't help me grow, you know, and the idea is to help me grow, yeah. You know, so at some point or another, I embrace it, but then I find a way to relieve it and move on, you know, and then focus on the task at hand, you know. I remember, I can tell you, I had a case. I'm not going to tell you full details, but like the defense attorney calls me and basically says, Irving, we're ready to spend $1 million defending this case. Are you ready? You know, essentially it's like, do you have $1 million to fight us? You right, know? Right, and like, I kid you not, my first thought was like, there's no way. Like, there's just no way, you know? Like, right. But my second thought was like, bring it kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Man, no, that's a big deal. That's a big flex of, hey, do you got $1 million to put toward this one case? And that's no small ordeal. And I appreciate you, because even what you talked on last time is you were speaking about this idea of you visualizing hardships as growth, you visualizing difficult times as growth. And you still have that same very similar mindset of like facing the pressure, you know, growing through the pain and not just going through the pain. And I picked that up from you last time, and it's refreshing hearing that you still got that fervor going strong when it comes to facing those difficult situations in life.
Yeah, I mean, look, like it's one of those things where it's like, fortunately, we're moving up on whatever goals we want to accomplish, right? But like if, for example, your goals aren't getting harder or aren't getting higher and bigger, then we're stagnating, you know? And so if I ever feel like I'm stagnant in a certain position, then my goals just aren't big enough, you know? Yeah. So that's why I'm like, I'm always going to be, I think at least I've been this way in my entire life. And I figure, you know, the rest of my life's going to be no different. I accept it. I embrace it. I accept the challenge. And It's more than anything is like figuring out a way that it doesn't, like the stress doesn't affect me physically and mentally. So I don't affect those around me in a negative way. I want to affect them in a positive way. And I'm a big believer is like the more positive you are, the more positive outcomes you create, you know?
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. No, that's relevant when it comes to the amount of people that each one of us influence. Sometimes we don't think about taking care of ourselves. It means we're also taking care of the way other people are around us. When we are healthy with taking care of our own stress, when we're healthy taking care of our own hardship, then it often prepares us to be best able to be around other people. There's the phrase that's often used, especially in counseling circles, but hurting people hurt people. And we probably can substitute that to say also, you know, stressed people hurt people. You know, in right. You know, burden people, hurt people, and it goes all the way around. But the idea of navigating that stress with grace and harmony is so key, and taking care of that pressure as you're describing is so key, not just for us, but also for the people around us. And sometimes that people around us piece motivates us more than taking care of ourselves.
No, absolutely. You know, and it's kind of, I think we touched on it last time. It's like I find, you know, my family, the people I care about, to motivate me. And essentially, at the end of the day, that helps me do what I'm doing, you know, so absolutely, I agree with you 100%.
Yes. So what's new with you? What's new over the last 3 years? What stands out to you over the last, whatever, 1,000 days or so since we last connected?
Well, I'm an attorney here in California. I take cases over California. I'm now in your state. I'm in Texas now. And so I'm taking cases in Texas. So that's new and exciting. It's different. I can tell you that. But I'm excited. And same thing, kind of what we've been talking about. At first, I was like, oh, man, here goes another, like, I feel like a rookie again, you know?
Right.
So
now, how and why? So are you living in Texas? Are you living in California? Where are you physically?
I'm physically in California. I'm living in San Diego, same place, you know. But yeah, I'm physically in California.
And then, so how did Texas come up with you? How did Texas get involved at all?
Well, it's kind of like with you and other friends. You know, I have a lot of friends in Texas that kept asking me, "Is like, why aren't you in California?" I'm like, I don't know, because I'm not licensed there, first of all. But I think if you think about it, like the way my mindset shift from even when last time we talked, because we were just coming out of COVID, if not, we were like in between.
Right, right.
But the world changed dramatically during COVID, right? And so what ended up happening is a lot of things that we used to do 100% in person, we now do virtually, right? Like, and so I realized that. And at some point or another, I'm like, okay, so why not? You know, what is stopping me from doing that, from pushing myself to like a different state?
Yeah.
You know, and because like, do I have to be there in person? No, but I also take cases. And for example, I'm in San Diego. I take cases in San Francisco. Mm. I just had a deposition earlier this morning in San Francisco. Did I have to be in San Francisco? No, I did it via Zoom. Mm. It's kind of the same thing, you know? So that's what got me thinking about it. And obviously, it's also like kind of like the Spanish also helps in Texas.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a combination of things that, like, you know, I think it all got started because of COVID and how the world shifted and how and it improved in a way. Like a lot of, especially in my world, in the legal world, it was very archaic. It was very, you know, old school. The technology in courtrooms was very old school. COVID kind of advanced all that, you know, so because it had to adapt to the actual technology that actually existed out in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then so was it a tedious process to, you know, take care of all the whatever paperwork behind the scenes to be able to operate in Texas?
Yeah, it always is. You know, it's like the every time like you're an attorney in a different state, it's a long process. Even like learning something as simple as filing a lawsuit, because it's even if you think about it, at least the way I always thought about it, especially with my staff, every county in California, it gets treated differently. Every courthouse is different. Every judge is different. So it would take some time for even, you know, we had a case recently in Chico up in Northern California. The rules in that county are way different than the rules in San Diego, way different than the rules in LA. And it's kind of the same thing in Texas. It's like learning a whole different way of filing a lawsuit, learning a whole different system. It takes some time. But, you know, I think over time we will get there.
Mm-hmm. And is it you that has to go through the Texas bar and all that, or is it somebody on the staff, or how does that work?
It's me. It's so basically everything's under my name, right? Because I'm the one licensed there. For example, my staff can still work under me, but I'm the one. It's my name because I'm the only one licensed there so far from my office. Eventually, like I'm gonna get more people in there, but essentially everything is strictly through me right now.
Mm-hmm. And Texas, I do appreciate how you said that the idea of Spanish speaking, and even when I've looked up past statistics about like the most densely populated Hispanic cities in the U.S., you know, we got El Paso, we have San Antonio, we have Austin and Houston, especially, of course, in all those valley cities as well that are Hispanic dense. Now, I know Florida is another one that pops up sometimes too. Is there any seed of thought of like expanding it out? Because I know so Chicago is densely populated with our people, New York, yeah. Florida. But are you saying, hey, no, bro, it's California, Texas, and that's it?
No, actually, no. I've actually already thought about the next two. Yeah. And so no, I've never, you know, ever since we met, like, you know, like I'm not limiting myself in any way. So no, I've actually already thought out the next two. It's going to be a process. I want to make sure, like, once I'm there, I learn it better than anyone else can learn it. You know, once I'm confident about that, then I will move to the next one. But yeah, trust me, like, I've already thought that a couple steps ahead. So I'm not done. It's coming, but you know, one step at a time.
Yes. Yes, for sure. And then do you have to make any trips to Texas at all with the virtual capability, or how has that worked for you over the last few years?
Yeah. So I do, you know, from time to time, like meeting clients, meeting, you know, other lawyers, meeting even doctors for what we do is important. So absolutely. Like, cause you know, as much as like, we love this, like it's not the same as being in person. It loses something, right? It loses the, you know, like the coffee shop environment that, you know, we talked about earlier. It's like just having a coffee together, it's in person, is so different than having coffee virtually. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the energy, you know, energy every person carries. But yeah, absolutely. I not only do I have to be there, I plan on being there, you know, more often now because I am in there. I am licensed there now.
Nice. Very nice. And I already told you off camera that we got to do an in-person version of the pod for your part three. So, you know, put that in your now. Let me know the dates you'll be coming in the Texas so we can make something happen over here.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. That would be a lot of fun too. So
yeah. Now, over the last 3 years, what would you pinpoint as a highlight or a couple of highlights for you over these past 3 years?
Well, obviously the Texas one is part of it. I think another part, which is kind of smaller, but I'm really proud of it, is at some point, my firm ended up hiring my sister, my younger sister, and it's a small, you know, addition to the office, but I love it, you know, because not only like is she a great worker, she is a great addition. Like, that's why especially if you remember the first part we did, is like, that's why I am the way I am. That's why I do what I do. It's for the people we care about, for, you know, the people we love. And so not only does that bring the business itself improvement, it helps us improve as a business, but it kind of makes me happy, you know? So I'm absolutely, that's one of the things that I'm like, top of my head, like, that's one of those things that I'm like, I absolutely love being able to do that. But having done that.
Yes, that's special, man. That's very, very powerful. I mean, what is your sister doing in the firm?
Just helping as an assistant, you know, and, you know, helping our cases, our clients, helping, you know, she works with my business partner on the pre-lit side of it. But, you know, she's helping us. She's helping us improve and helping us kind of, you know, be better for our clients.
Nice. Does she have an ambition to follow in your footsteps and do the attorney thing, or is she hesitant to go that route now?
I think you'd have to ask her that, but I don't think so. Like, I think she sees I'm kind of crazy and she's like, I don't want to be that crazy. You know, I'm cool. Just being me. So yeah. I think, you know, so far she likes what she does.
Good.
I don't know if in the future, maybe she'll change her mind. But I think it's like, she seemed crazy. She doesn't want to become crazy.
Respect to that. No, man, and that's special. I know last time we talked extensively about your mom and how how much she had such a beautiful impact on you. And then, of course, you talked about your brother as well, some of the challenges that he had to overcome along the way. And then I think the three people you mentioned more distinctly was mom, dad, and then you mentioned brother. But it's cool that this time that we have another, and you know, a new character to the story with hearing about your sister, and that you are in a position to offer her an opportunity to be able to work with the firm. So that's special, man. Congratulations on being able to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm telling you, I'm stoked. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's kind of like what we do for our clients. It's kind of like what we talked about last time. It was like love, care, serve, right? For our clients, but it's also for the people that are our family and the firm, like employees, and even our family themselves, you know? So yes. I think I always say this thing is like, I'm the same person in every aspect of my life. And whether I'm a lawyer, whether I'm a, you know, a brother or a business owner, I'm not changing. And so I have no, like, I had no hesitation in doing that when the opportunity came. So.
Yes. And it's special to command that kind of respect. I think there is I've heard about the trends, especially with the younger people. I don't know how old your sister is, but especially with younger people, there is this ambition to want to work for companies that are actually making a difference, that are actually, you know, providing a net good. And the idea that your sister would be willing to and wanting to come work with Big Brother. Again, there's sometimes when family members where it really is on the opposite end. We're like, let me get away as far as possible from my family members. But the idea that she would choose and be willing to come on board and work with you, it definitely speaks about your character that, again, I think commands so much respect, especially based on what we discussed last time with how you approach life and your mindset and all that you've persevered through over your life.
No, yeah, look, I appreciate it. But, and also, like, I think, you know, I think it, I've never even thought about, like, us having an issue. Like, I was always super close. I always tell her, like, if it wasn't for her, because she's younger than me, if it wasn't for her, I'm not even sure I'd be where I am. Just in terms of, like, you know, motivating. But just, like, I think kind of like what we talked about last time, like, you know, my mom being, like, always in the back of my mind, my brother always being in the back of my mind and pushing me. Well, so was a little sister, you know, and like, I always wanted to, you know, overcome whatever stressors, like we talked about earlier, like life threw at me, because I knew she was there and she was watching, and, you know, I'd hope to make her proud. And so at the end of the day, like, when the opportunity came, I was like, I'm not hesitating, because I know there won't be an issue.
So. Yes. And even connecting it to what you said about the pressures of earlier, there is something, I think, wholesome about a pressure that makes us want to rise to the occasion, a pressure that business owners feel that sometimes other employees may not, is the pressure of the success and the revenue of this organization when people are dependent. When their livelihood is dependent now on, if we're bringing in money, that's a different amount of pressure and stress than just the pressure of, if you were an employee and you quit. But when you have your firm and people are dependent on a paycheck based on the results of what you do, it's a different kind of pressure. And I've seen many people, you know, rise to the occasion of the pressure that's put on them. How do you navigate that one with the pressure of people depending on the revenue of the firm to take care of their livelihood?
You know, it only gets to me when like staff tells me, it's like, oh, for example, like whenever they buy a house, right? I'm like, oh my God, you know, great. Thanks for letting me know. Or, yeah. You know, something like that. But like I think it goes back to what we talked about in the first episode. And like, I've been through enough in life. Yes. That these pressures, it's like, you know what? I've been through worse. Like at the end of the day, yeah. Like, and even I always say is like, I've had nothing. I know how it feels like. So it's okay. Like, you know, like regardless of what happens, I've been there, done that. And with experience now, I'm like, it's okay. Like, I'll overcome, I'll survive, I'll work tomorrow, and tomorrow the sun will rise again. New day, new challenges, but also new victories, you know. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if I always keep that mindset, I'm going to keep improving.
Right.
And if I keep improving, I'm providing for, you know, for the people that believe in me and the people that follow me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, one question that I wanted to ask you about all of this and what you're building and what you've done is one common denominator among successful people is like impulse control and delayed gratification. Do you have any strategies that have really worked for you and helped you with that one habit of impulse control? I mean, I feel like without it, there's so little that you can accomplish. But again, what you've done and what you've built seems to indicate, you know, learning and maybe even mastering that impulse control and delayed gratification. So what helps you in that regard?
Oh man, that's a good question. I don't know, because I think in a way, probably everything my past experiences in life, not having, you know, sometimes not having enough to eat, like as a kid. So I've never been driven by my material things. I've never been driven by, for example, even trends, you know, like trends in the sense of like someone got a new car, you know, like I have friends that get a new car, like an expensive car. And they're like, Irving, you should get one. I'm like, why? Like, I see no benefit, at least for me. Right. Like everyone's different. And at the end of the day, I always think about it like this, just what you said earlier, the pressure of like other people relying on you. Well, other people are relying on me. So I got to make sure that I take care of my mind, which is the most important thing. I take care of my body, my soul, my energy. Once I take care of that, everything else is kind of like a cherry on top. You know, like it's not important to me. It's not, you know, something that I need to. If you think about it, it's like we're only limited in time and we're only limited in energy, right? So if I'm focusing myself on stuff that like material things or things that are not important to advance myself, advance my family, advance my team, then I'm wasting time, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think if anything, I think focusing on that allows me to delay gratification on other things. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, then do you, I mean, then do you navigate with, when it comes to some of us, especially as men, and maybe even especially in the Hispanic culture, like there is the common language would be there's a tendency to flex. Maybe that's an American thing, but then there's a men masculine thing. You know, we see it in sports, and they're pointing to the name, and they're pounding on their chest, and they're strutting over here. And it seems as though the more you go forward, the more like, especially if you're growing, and you're growing, and you're progressing, and you're challenging yourself, then you have more to flex about than even, again, maybe even 3 years ago. And so is there a, do you notice, do you pick up on yours? Are you like, man, like is that an issue for you or a thing you've become aware of with yourself? Or are you like, nah, I don't really have that tendency to flex, or maybe the flex looks different?
Yeah, no, actually, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. And it brought memories of like uncles, like when I was a kid. And like, so I know what you're talking about. And especially like you said, Latinos. But I think for me, at least the way I think about it is, essentially I was brought up and raised by my mother.
Yeah.
Right. So I did not get influenced by that. In fact, I got turned off by that. Whenever I would see it, I would get extremely turned off by it. And now, like, honestly, like, I'm more of, like, the idea of let other people do the flexing for you. I don't need to, like, but I think it goes back to I'm comfortable with who I am.
Yeah.
I am confident in who I am. And, you know, I owe it to the people that believe in me to not be that way, because the less I'm that way, the more I can focus on what's important, and the less I can focus, or the less I focus on things that don't matter. You know, like even before, when I was a baby lawyer, I would remember like people tell me, it's like, well, other plaintiff's attorneys don't know who you are. I'm like, I don't really care. Mm. Like, you know what I care about? I care about the defense, the opposite side, to know who I am, you know, because if they know who I am, that means I'm doing a good job.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously over time things have changed, but I think I read this in a book, but I always say, it's like, what other people think of me is none of my business. It really isn't, because I can't control that. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, it comes down to the idea too, is like, it's like when you walk in a room, right? When you walk in a room, we all think it's like everyone's looking at us.
Right.
No, too self-absorbed in their own, like, oh, someone's looking at us. Everyone's literally thinking the same thing that no one's looking at. It's like, and so once I kind of wrapped that idea into my head, I was like, all right, then just keep looking forward and keep at your path. Like, and also the idea of like, look, time reveals everything, right? If you're doing the right things, and you're focusing on the right things, and you're focusing on the right people, time does not lie, you know? Right. And over time, someone else will do the flexing. Someone else will do it for me. Yeah. I don't have to do it.
So. Yes. And it's refreshing, man. I really appreciate that. And it's something that, you know, my wife and I have discussed and have, we talked about a lot. Like you said, the example you used earlier about the cars is like, if we get a new car, like, what if we didn't tell anybody? Or we got our house, like, what if we didn't tell anybody about our house? And it's been, I found myself, even when it came to, like, you know, going on vacation or traveling, I remember there would be times we'd go on a nice trip, but even the high I would feel would be about posting. I like the high I felt posting about it and getting affirmation more sometimes in a trip, and that bothered me. And I was so you're telling me the social approval means more than the trip? Why don't I just not do trips? And then just, if social approval means that much to me, there's so many less expensive ways to get social approval. But right. To that point, it took me down this path of going like, it's made me ask, how much of about my, the good parts of my life do I have to highlight, emphasize, and underline for other people, whether it's purchasing and more materialistic or traveling, or even if it's just more like stuff I'm doing in the community. Again, I believe in sharing good news and talking about what's being done, yet it seems as though anything can become a flex. And for me, I know it's important for my own ego and my own character to be mindful of the purposes and intentions around even, again, posting certain content. So anyway, I appreciate your approach. I think it's very inspiring to somebody like me where like, man, ego could be huge. And I'd rather, you know, look good than look bad. And I'd rather be, you know, be admired in a special way. But sometimes I think it's, for me, it's overly relying on that admiration from other people.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, at the end of the day, like, there's no better way of flexing than what you help other people be or become, you know. And like, I think at the end of the day, like, that's what's important to me, you know. If you figure out what's important to you, like you said, like, then everything else, it doesn't matter, you know. And like, I always tell people, especially with my clients, sometimes I always tell them, I was like, look, I didn't become an attorney for my ego. I became an attorney to help people.
Yeah.
And if I lose focus of that, then I'm doing the wrong thing, not only for that particular client, but for myself too. So I think a lot of it is kind of understanding yourself, just like what you said.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, the reality of it is there's so much of what we can do is, it's just a question I have to revisit often with going, okay, am I doing this to be seen, or is doing it enough? And then when I do something good, it's like, how many people do I have to tell? Or what if I told the least amount of people possible, what would happen? And so that's been, as I've, as I, again, it's navigating, how much of our lives to share. But I appreciate your mindset about it. So then, where does your inspiration for that come from? I know you have like this life where you've persevered through incredibly deep challenges. So then, I can't help but think about like, is this brother like religious? Or what's the spiritual influences around you? I know we didn't really discuss spirituality or religion, you know, much last time. But I'm curious, are those elements that are influencing you as well? Because it sounds like a very, whether it be like the humility of like the Christian trope, or even very much the detachment of like a Buddhist trope. But how much of those things influence you, or do they at all?
Yeah, no, I always say that I'm very spiritual. I think Christianity, Buddhism, I read all of those. And it all influences my thought and my thinking. I guess the way I always explain it is, no matter what I went through as a kid, I feel like, and I think a lot of it, and I think as I've grown older, I kind of gotten to this conclusion. My mother just showed me a lot of love when I was a toddler, you know, and I believe that in a way, if your early beginnings, you are like somehow or another, you get to learn that you are loved no matter what, then no matter what you do, people will love you, right? And so I know I don't need to announce to everyone everything I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, so because like I always think about it like this, if you're doing enough good, eventually like those people that you are helping will do it for you. You know, like I'll give you a quick example that I never even thought like was going to happen. But a few years ago, like I was speaking at a high school. And so I didn't really think anything of it. I do it often. And, you know, literally like 2 years ago or like a year and a half ago, I got invited to law school admissions, like celebration, right, of newly admitted students. And one kid comes up to me, he's like, Irving. And I'm like, who are you? Like, why does he keep, like, how does he know me? Right. And like, he explains, he's like, you came and spoke at my high school years and years ago. Everything, like, I remember you inspiring me to become a lawyer and inspiring me to go to law school. Right. And so I had no, like, I had never even, like, after that talk in his high school, I had never seen him. I didn't remember his name. But here he is, like, and telling other people, like, this is what Irving did for me, right? And like, to this day, I remember that, you know, and like every single, as I've gone through life, that happens constantly where I'm like, I don't need to tell people like what I'm doing. If I'm doing the right thing for others, like those people will eventually do it. And that part, like, I didn't even tell every single, like, I'm only telling the story for example, but like, I remember when that moment happened, I was like, it kind of gave me a sense of like, I'm actually doing something good in life. You know, I'm actually making an impact in life and I don't need, you know, validation any other way, but that I can guarantee that moment, that specific moment of him coming up to me and remembering me, it inspired me for the next year or so. And even now, right? Like it kind of like, it's like the boost of energy, right? It's the boost of energy that you need when you're like doubting yourself, when you overcome or you're faced with the stressor in life. Those little moments are super powerful, you know? And it's kind of like, it not only like in Christianity, but in Buddhism, it always tells you is like, look, celebrate the good parts of life, celebrate the happy moments, right? Like, and once you do, I don't know if it's your energy, your spirit, or whatever it is, wants more. We want more of it, right? I believe if it's pure happiness, if it's pure, like something good, then it's going to give you pure energy, you know? And it's not something like, I'm not doing something that becomes addicting or anything like that. It's just out of pure loving to help other people, loving to, you know, make a difference in other people's lives. And that, the purity of that, just motivates me tremendously, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I appreciate that. So much respect for that. I think it's, I remember somebody describing it like altruistic contribution. How can I give to this in a very, very pure way without it being something that I do it for myself? Because even as a business owner, there's what's called like, called cause marketing. And it's the idea of you support a cause and you show that you're supporting a cause and it's good for the cause and it's good for your brand and all of these things. Yet I think there's a, again, there is a small loss of the altruism because you're doing it knowing that I'm going to benefit from it. But the truth is too, though, I think even if sometimes our motivations start out warped, what I've seen with people and even in myself as a one case study is often showing up and serving seems to purify a lot of that materialism. One example I could think of, we did this event for the homeless outreach, just like showing up for meals and sitting down and having conversations. I remember just having one conversation and I remember asking myself would I really ask somebody what they do for fun in that setting? And would I even bring up fun at all? Like, you know what I'm saying? It just seemed inappropriate, not like wrong, but it just seemed not to be fitting to say, oh, what do you do for fun? And then they asked me, and what if I was like, oh, like I play my PlayStation 4 or whatever it was at the time. Like those things just seemed to not harmonize together. So it's like what really matters in those moments is not being able to tell somebody what I do for fun, but it's showing up and caring about people, about things that truly matter. And it's not so much, the video games meant so little when I was showing up serving. My fun activities meant so little when I'm helping somebody who doesn't even have a home. But I found it to be purifying just to show up to serve, even if the motives could be a little bit off.
Yeah, no, look, I think you hit on the head. It's like the idea of like you're doing something that is meaningful for them and something that it's impactful, right? Because like when you said that, the thing that came to mind is like whenever I used to do orphanage trips, I felt the same way that I think you're describing. Like I would take materials and then I'm like, am I really doing this for them? Like, what am I, like, why am I doing this? Right.
Right.
And so what I realized at that moment is like, I'm taking materials and that obviously helps the orphanage, but more than anything, what I found from children in an orphanage, they love the 1 hour that you spend with them. Mm. Like that hour to them is very meaningful. And that hour, I remember whenever I would go, I would just play with them, just spend time with them, just smile with them, just care for them.
Yeah.
Right. And that's something that no one usually gives them. Everyone wants to give them materials and, you know, we all have that heart to give them materials, but when a child really needs is love, someone accepting them, someone making them smile, right? Like, and so I remember that. I was like, once I like was able to parse those two things together, I was like, what I'm doing is a good thing. It's the right thing. And so it's never, I don't think it's ever going to be to where like you gain nothing out of it. Because I remember those moments motivated the F out of me. I would remember, it's like, look, these kids are in these horrible situations, yet they're still able to smile. They're still able to show other people that, you know, they're loving, they're caring. So, you know, I think that's what literally came to mind when you said that. It's hard, but I think if you do it for caring and like you do it entirely for what those people or what the people you're helping, it is impactful for them, then I think, you know, I think we're doing the right thing.
Yes. I respect, man. I think I really love that. And how like there's certain things, you know, maybe, you know, we increase in influence and we increase in income and there's opportunities for us to be able to give in certain ways. I know there's like at least one book, maybe several books about the idea of how you contribute once, especially as you accumulate different amounts of wealth, because in some ways you could pay other people to do certain things for you, to include, you could pay for materialism to go to these people that are in need, which is good and appropriate, and you know, let's keep doing that. Yet, the idea of you showing up yourself and serving, connecting, loving, that's some of those things that's irreplaceable. And it's so good for them, and it's so good for you, for yourself to really to be, it seems to be very purifying to do it. It makes you like put a reset on life when you're serving people who are less privileged, and you're just trying to lift up, love, show patience, show kindness. And, you know, it's your three words. It's love, care, serve. There's those things over and over again.
Right. Absolutely. I agree.
So let me ask you about the last 3 years. And have you faced any challenges that you've confronted and had to overcome in your life?
I think it's just growing as a business, growing as a person, you know, growing it and obviously the, you know, different state. And like I told you earlier, like what I find is it's like the better I get as a lawyer, like, and you know, the better I'm able to help clients, the more I notice the other side just beats at us. Like they will try anything, but that comes with the nature of, you know, being a lawyer. It's adversarial, you know? And so I, at the end of the day, like I'm used to it now. And I always say, it's like, look, if we're not facing challenges, we're not growing. So, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I embrace it. I embrace my fears. I embrace my challenges. And once I'm able to do that, then, you know, I kind of like accept it and my brain moves on and tries to figure out how to get better and how to improve.
Nice. And what would you say your goals are moving forward?
Oh man, I have so many. How much time do you have? look, like I think the goals remain the same. It's like every year, every day, improve as a person, improve as a lawyer, improve for my clients. If we want to talk about specifics, like we talked earlier, expanding the firm reach, you know, in terms of like whether it's other states, other cities, you know, however we can help people with what we do best, you know, and in terms of even me as on the personal side, actually, like, you know, getting my own family. I think that's a goal. I think that's a harder goal for me than the business side of it, but you know, we can't be strong in all areas.
yes. Yeah. I mean, what is that like? I think there's a lot of conversation that happens, especially across socials on, the dating market again, especially, maybe how old are you?
35.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially people in our generation, there's at least the trends have been communicated that there's the age that people get married is older and older, and, similar with having kids. So what do you observe, in those arenas?
Yeah, look, I think what you hear is true. It's harder and harder. I think social media makes it a little bit harder. Even though I think originally the idea was it's supposed to make it easier.
Yeah.
But honestly, like it's kind of what we kind of touched off the air that we create our own reality. And to be honest with you, like the reason I'm single is because I created my own reality. You know, right after law school, I was so focused on, you know, becoming a good lawyer. And at the time, I was also a professor for master's level students. So I would go from my day job as a lawyer to teaching master's level courses,
yeah.
You know, and that was kind of my thing for 3 years, you know, so my focus wasn't on that, you know, like, and even as if we talk about like the firm, my focus has been the business.
Yeah.
Could I at some point shift? Like, I think I'm in a position where I can shift a little bit of that energy, but I have no one to blame by myself, but it's not like I'm unhappy. I'm extremely happy with my life. I'm content. I'm confident in me, myself. So it goes back to the idea that I told you is like, we create our own reality. We create what we want out of life. There's no rules. Like there's, as long as you're doing good for people and you're doing good to people and you're not harming others, there's literally no rules. Like,
right.
No, there's no, like, you know, something that says it's like, Irving, you need to become, I know there's like a Latino rule. My mom keeps reminding me, it's like, why aren't you having kids already? You know, like,
yeah.
But that's not, you know, that's a flexible rule. At the end of the day, my mom wants me to be happy, you know? Yeah. So, you know.
Then do you think that, I mean, speaking to you again, if I'm doing an assessment, right, and, you know, assessment of a person and they're going, okay, what do they have going for them, right? You would be categorically a high value man. Okay, he's educated, he's bilingual, he's he has his law firm, he's a business owner, he's traveled and he's expanding, he's growing, he has a heart for the community. And then so like, where would you even, if we're talking about pursuing a partner, it seems like you can't, as a high value man, like you can't just be like scooping up anybody. Like, again, your standards probably have to be pretty high. And then, so where would you even, and especially, is it via apps? Is it online? Is it on socials? Or is it again, if I was talking to somebody like you, again, in my personal life, I'd probably say, yeah, like probably somebody in church or somebody like that. But what are your thoughts on even how somebody like you, a high value man, would or should meet somebody?
Bro, you tell me. No, I think at the end of the day, you hit it right. Like, I always say is like, I'm not looking for someone who drains my energy. I'm looking for someone that lifts my energy.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to march at the same level, but marches in the same direction.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they're driven. But other than, I think those people are everywhere, you know, it's just, and I always say it's like, everyone has a different timeline for everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just my timeline hasn't been to that point. So, you know, to answer your question, I have no idea. I'll tell you when it happens.
Yeah.
But I look, like, there's great people everywhere. So it's not something that I'm concerned about. Like, the whole social media, I think it's a little bit true, but at the end of the day, like, there's great people. It's like in any industry and business, right? There's great leaders in a certain industry. There's horrible leaders in that same industry.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. There's great people. There's great lawyers, great women, like women, high quality lawyers, teachers, you know, on social media, same thing. So I think, you know, it's limitless. I just got to find the right timing, I guess.
Yeah. Respect, brother. Respect. Well, look, I want to respect your time, but I also want to say a big thank you for doing a part two. Again, we got to do part three in person. So you let me know when you're coming to Texas and we'll make it happen. But thank you for spending some time with me today.
Absolutely. Love to. And I'll see you next time in person.
And let people know where to find you online.
Yeah. You can follow back to social media on Instagram, Irving, IRVING .ESQ. I also have my own website, irvingpedrosa.com. Also the firm website, which is dpinjuryattorneys.com.
All right. Perfect. All right, my brother. Well, thank you. And everybody listening, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you on the next one.